Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Hello, my Dream Big listeners. I do hope you are all well today. As I am so grateful to be here in the studio with some of the most important people in my life. I feel like I've known them forever, but I haven't really. But we've experienced a lifetime of adventure. And so without further ado, I would like to introduce Kim and Keith Waller, who are great friends of mine, but also are the founders of Hope for Haiti. And it's an organization that goes to Haiti every year, more than once a year now. And they do all sorts of mission work. And I've been lucky enough and blessed enough to be able to join them. So hello, you two, and thanks for coming in.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Good morning, Jill. Again, thanks for having us.
Yes, I know, Keith, you're probably so excited to be here. But Kim and I kind of are a lot alike, and my husband and Roger and Keith are a lot alike, and that's a good thing because we call it the kite and the string. If it wasn't for Keith and Roger, Kim and I would float off into Never Never Land, but thank God they're there for us, and we get them off the ground every once in a while, too, and also get them in our radio show. Anyway, I told Roger you were coming in. He's like, you're kidding. He's actually going to do that? And I'm like, should you come and hold his hand? But anyway, so let's talk a little bit. Let's talk first, Kim. I want to know, how did you end up in Port-au-Prince?
Well, I was the youth director at our church in Hope in Warren. And there was another pastor from Cross of Christ, and he invited us to go down. So there were three churches, St. Paul and Trenton. And we went down with over 30 people, teenagers and adults, and went down, and I was taking our daughter and our son, and and I mentioned it to my husband that we were going to take this first mission trip, and he's like, no, you're not. And I'm like, yeah, I think we are.
How did you buy the tickets? I want to stop you, though. How did you even get to that point first, though? Is it something that you heard at your church? Someone had come to the church to discuss it, or in other words, how did you decide that you were going to go?
It was more of a pastor from Cross of Christ.
Okay.
That he had talked to us, and we had talked about mission work for so long, but we had never done anything, and so this sounded exciting. I'm a kite like you, so it's exciting. It's an adventure. Let's do it.
Third world country. You're
correct.
All about it. Okay. And so I know for me, you know, I've explained it to you guys before, but just for the listeners, you know, I know what happened with me. I've done a lot of, you know, benefits and a lot of work here in the United States, but there was a calling I had to go. Hmm. Did you feel that there was a calling for you to do a mission?
I really did, because the kids and I had been to so many retreats, and we had talked about it, and there's definite need in the Detroit area, in the United States.
For sure.
I understand that.
Me too.
And it also says in the Bible, you know, to go to the ends of the earth. So it just felt this was our next step.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So now we'll bring it to the wonderful Keith. So here's your wife, and she comes home with this brilliantly excited idea, I'm sure, that she is going to take, I think, what, your daughter and son to a third world country. Now, let me explain to you, listeners. Keith is a police officer, retired police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was really just overly excited to hear that his wife wanted to go to a third world country with a couple of their kids. So how'd you handle that, huh?
Well, I'll step back just a little bit in regards to Kim and her work as a youth director, that she was always challenging the kids, and she was involved in the Blight program in Detroit and the soup kitchens and 30-hour famine, and she was always, you know, trying to push the kids to teach them more and so forth. But I never thought it would lead to stepping outside the boundaries of the United States. And because of my job and, you know, being a news guy, she came home And she was all excited, said, hey, got these two other churches. We're going to take the senior youth to Haiti. And your son and your daughter want to go. And I go, no, you're not. I go, do you have any idea about what that country entails? And of course, if you know anything about Haiti,
why don't you explain it a little bit, what it was like in the 80s?
They had an uprising, mm-hmm. and they forced the president out at that time. His name was Baby Doc. And so they were going through a huge transition. So there was a lot of rioting, trying to figure out what the government was going to do. Our U.S. military was involved with the U.N. There were a lot of Marines there helping mm-hmm. Control the problems that were there. And so this was 1999.
Right.
So it hadn't been too much removed, and there was still quite a bit of problems there. So when she came home and said that she had agreed to go at these other two churches, let alone the fact that she was taking two of the three kids, I said, no, that wasn't happening. So it was probably the longest 2 weeks in our marriage at
and
that time.
And how many years were you married at
which
that
was
time?
Probably 30.
30 years.
Or close to it.
Longest 2 weeks, why?
There wasn't much talking going on. And then another issue that sort of didn't help and was sort of nudging me is that an individual who's become probably my very best friend, they didn't have children. Him and his wife didn't have children. And so he agreed to go as a male chaperone. And of course, that didn't help with him nudging me all the time. So through some prayer and just thinking about it, I thought, well, she came home one day and I said, you need to buy another ticket. She goes, buy another ticket. I go, yeah, I think I have to go. I can't send 3/5 of my family to some place like Haiti without me going. So,
wow. And obviously, you two make an incredible pair because you are a kite and a string. We're going to refer back to that. But because, and Kim and I are a lot alike, and you recall when I had a similar situation with my husband, that when I told him that I wanted to go to Haiti, and he's, you know, what I do for a living, I'm always traveling, and it's not like I ask his permission. But this one, I felt, you know, I did need to talk to him, and he absolutely was the first time he ever put his foot down and said no. And I was like, oh, dear, you know, what do I do now? Because I was going to go, you know, no matter what he said. And you both were so generous with your time to sit down with us. And I remember Roger had his arms folded, his head down. And, you know, Kim and I are looking at all the pictures. Oh, look at the orphans. Aren't they beautiful? You know, and then Roger's just sitting there. And you took it upon yourself to say, so, Rog, you know, how you feeling about her going? Do you like it? And he's like, no. And you explained that situation to him.
And I was very glad I did go. Of mm-hmm. course, it got me hooked. There's
right.
no doubt about that. Because of my military experience, because of my tactical career in mm-hmm. law enforcement, and that type of training that I've been through and being able to be there, I know that there was a lot of parents that were very nervous about sending their kids there. And mm-hmm. then once they heard that I was going to go, that made them a little more comfortable.
Sure.
Same in speaking with Roger. That
well, yeah, remember he made me stand by you.
Yes.
This is Keith standing with my backpack.
We got a lot of pictures of the two of them standing together.
But one thing, again, that going and trying to reassure people, we also had difficulties not only with some parents within the church, but our board of elders, because this is normally a church-sponsored event.
Mm-hmm.
And so the board of elders, same way, they were a little concerned, knowing the history of Haiti. And but with me going and the amount of trips now, which is probably close to 40 or 42 trips now,
42
almost 20,
trips.
20 years,
wow.
that we've never experienced anything that has been difficult or problems with the team. We're always in a secure environment. I always make sure that I've got proper drivers and security with us to protect us on our trips.
Right. I agree. And I do feel safe with you there, and also with our what we call our friends, which at first I just thought that that's what they were, being me. Oh, look, these nice people are sitting with us. Isn't that awesome? Little did I know that they were actually our protection and security, but they were also full of love.
Right.
So, Kim, let me ask you this. Your first trip, try and remember, 40-some trips ago.
Yeah.
I know the magical moments that happened for me. what was your first experience of like, wow, this is right that I'm here? Can you tell me that? Can you remember back to that first trip? Like, wow, because it's overwhelming for anyone that has never been to Haiti. When you go there, there's all sorts of senses that just trigger. You know, you've got the smells of the city. You've got the noise of the city. You've got, you know, just the energy is just very heightened. At least that's what I felt. It was like New York City on steroids, you know.
Right, right.
So how did you feel when you stepped off the plane and you got to Haiti? I know it was a lot different then than it is now. The airport itself.
Right. The airport is much different. What I'd like to touch on is if I go back to my first trip, we brought down a lot of things with us, as we do each time, a lot of donations. And we went to this a place called Cité Soleil, which is a city built on a garbage dump. And I remember being there. We went at dusk, because that was the safest time to go, because people would still be asleep, so that we could go and drop off. We weren't dropping off food. We were dropping off clothes. And so we went to a little shack that was their church, the Lutheran church. And my husband was with me, and we had our son and daughter. And we dropped off the clothes, and my girlfriend and I had divided all the clothes up into sizes and in neat little piles. And we were like,
All learned since then.
So these people could come in and get the size that they wanted. And these people that had no clothes, you had children that were running around naked, you know, were just grabbing clothes everywhere. And I just remember the moment my son said, why didn't we bring more clothes? We have more at the guest house. Why didn't we do that? And I said to him, I said, I want you to remember this when you want another pair of soccer shoes when we go home.
Right.
And I knew at that moment that we would be coming back.
You knew then.
Because we needed to come back to remind ourselves, because we were going to go back to Miami and come back to Michigan and so forth. And we would just be overcome with all the stuff here, and life would just be normal again, that we needed to go back just to be reminded.
So did you ever think that you would have gone back 40 plus times?
I never thought I'd be this age. So no, I didn't.
So let me ask you this, Keith, compared to that first time, now I've heard stories about your first trips, and now, what would you think have been most of the improvements that have been made in regard to the actual mission trips? And what have you seen in regard to progress? Because people, I know when I raise money every year, they're like, well, what's it going to now? What's it going to now? And there are times where you feel like, gosh, I wish we could do more. You know, we never feel like we do enough. But how do you feel that it's changed from an economic standpoint, and also just from everything else that you've seen and actually you both created?
Well, over the years, we've seen different presidents come in. And the last two presidents, the one now and the one prior, were non-political presidents. They have probably made some of the most drastic changes that we've seen, because they weren't involved in the politics their whole life.
Okay.
And so some of the things such as roads, the cleanliness of the town, there are garbage trucks and dumpsters placed in certain areas. Not that they just still don't discard their garbage on the side of the road, but there are employees that come and help sweep up and help keep those things type of, at least the area, a little cleaner, not as many fires on the sides of the road. The issue that all governments have to deal with, it's a small country, probably only about 10.5 million people, is corruption. And that's what they're dealing with now. They have found out that the existing president has found that the many hundreds of millions of dollars donated from the earthquake just 8.5 years ago, it's almost 9 years ago now, has disappeared. Governmental officials, people have taken that money when they've left. And so there's been some uprising in regards to the pressure on this president prosecute these individuals who have taken that type of money that should have been used for infrastructure. Now, it's difficult in the layout, as you know, that to come in and to completely plow things down and try to rebuild with an infrastructure. They still don't have running water, even in main buildings. Most water is from tanks on top of the roof. They do have electricity, but it's only maybe 4 hours a day, sometimes five. for those living on the streets, living in small little shacks and huts, they don't have electricity. They just deal with either possibly a small generator, or they don't have it at all, or they run off of battery systems. If they're going to have some kind of light through the evenings, they'll run off of some kind of a small generator or a battery inverter system. So there's been changes. It's been a slow go. We thought for years after the earthquake that a lot of that rubble from the damage, which was overwhelming for us when we went, would be there for many, many years. It was cleaned up within a couple of years, and we were surprised about that. So.
That's good. I mean, I know just from year to year when I've gone, and I remember like being out of power for, you know, I think the power went off at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it would be off till pretty much 6 or 7 at night, something like that. Yeah. And but one thing I want to point out too is, I'm assuming you may have faced this as well, but when I raise money for Haiti and I talk about going, a lot of people bring up the corruption and they say, well, why should I give money? Because it's just going to go to the government. The beautiful thing about what we do is that we see exactly where every dollar goes.
Right.
I mean, yep. So when anyone that does donate Hope for Haiti, and then all of the missionaries that come in, I mean, that's what I love is handing you that cash and being able to, you know, buy rice and beans, and then not only go and, you know, grab the rice and beans, carry the rice and beans, but then distribute the rice and beans to families. And that's the most important thing.
100%.
So,
And it's getting to those people that through the, as that money's being washed down through the government, a good 40 or 50% of those people aren't seeing the fruits of that money that's being donated. Where with us, as you say, we take it, we go right to the warehouse, we purchase rice and beans and flour and spaghetti, and we take those to the orphanages, we stop on the side of the road to those who need it. So we're given 100% of everything that's been donated to the people who need it.
I do want to say also, besides the rice and the beans, that we have our friends, like you said, but they're working with us. So it's not just a handout.
Right.
You know, so there's so many that are able to work with us, whether we're doing construction or an eyeglass clinic or wherever we're at, then they get like a tip or a wage for the week. And so like, yeah, if we were able to go down every month, that would be great. They have work.
Oh, here you go, Keith. You're ready. But Kim, let me ask you this, because you do so much of the administrative part of it. And I mean, that is like planning, you know, a family trip beyond. I mean, just because it's not just Michigan people, you have missionaries from all over the country now, right? How do you coordinate that? Are you working on it every month? I mean, is this something that you have to work on every month all the time? Or how does that work with you? How do you, I know after a while you kind of get used to it, but still it's a lot of planning.
It is. And just keeping it all straight. We have tentatively 4 trips planned this year. So,
4?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like we have a group from Florida going in April.
Okay.
And then another church from Michigan in June, and then a church in Alabama. Yeah.
Alabama.
July.
Is that new, the Alabama
That's
one?
That's my brother's church.
Oh, okay, great.
And I said, don't you want to go in November? No, we want to go in July. I'm like, okay.
Ooh.
I'll only be 110.
Yeah.
That's the month we first went. We went for years in July because that's when kids would be out of school.
I prefer the January,
yes,
February one.
Too.
Thank you. And it's still hot there, you know.
It is.
If I could add a little on that in regards to the administration, is that technology has helped a lot today for her.
Okay.
Emails is very important because now a lot of the pastors and our friends have emails over there, where years ago she didn't have that. So
how did you communicate back then to figure out what the mission was going to be?
Phone calls. In the beginning, we went once a year. It was phone calls to Haiti to make sure they had us on their calendar.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a driver, Leonard.
Which I'd like to talk about, Leonard, if we could.
We went and we would see our name just circled on his paper calendar. And I'm like, gosh,
that's
I
all
hope
it was.
He remembers.
So, Leonard, for our listeners, was an amazing human being. I truly believe he was an angel on this earth. And how did you even meet Leonard? He was our driver. So why don't you tell him a little bit about what he was, how you met him, And then
our very first trip, when we had over 30 people, we had two vans, and Leonard was one of the drivers. And I just wanted to add first, before you speak, that I'm sure that Leonard is the one that changed Keith's mind about Haiti. He was almost like Jesus walking on earth. I would have to remind our team members that he was not Jesus, and he could not save us. He could not provide our salvation, but God spoke through him.
Absolutely.
And he had the strongest faith. And if we were in any danger, it was like, it's no problem.
Oh, that
if
was
we
his
die,
answer.
We go to heaven.
Yeah.
No problem.
No problem. What was the we pray, we go, no problem. That's
right.
What he said. So no matter what the stress was, say that he had a green bus, and I used to say that the green bus was like a magic, you know, the magic bus. And we'd be like heading towards some
It was
bowl,
a happy bus. It had a smile on
remember
it.
Remember the big boulders in the road and stuff? And I was like, Leonard, we're not going to be able to go over that. He's like, no problem. We pray, we go, no problem. And the bus would just get over these things. It was crazy.
Yep.
So how was he influenced by you? I mean, how did you influence by him? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's definitely the man who changed my life. Here I thought, on our first trip, you know, I was 42 years old, and I considered myself a pretty godly man, and going to church. I was very involved in our church. Kim was a youth director, and so forth. But it was between that first trip and watching 30 high school kids and how they responded to the Haitians, how they just immediately began relationships with them, and along with Leonard, him driving us around, listening to him try to speak English, watching the joy in his heart no matter what we did, how we did it. We hired him as a driver originally, mm-hmm. but when we got to all our work locations, he got right out and worked with us. He was a part of it. He didn't have to worry about anything like that. So
I remember when I was trying to take this shovel and dig up rock, and I just couldn't get it. He's like, give it to me.
Yeah.
He says, let me do it. Well, what I want to explain to the listeners is, unfortunately, 2 years ago, coming up,
In February,
Leonard was...
January 17th.
Yeah, January. He was gunned down, and it was devastating for everyone who ever knew him. His funeral, you guys were both there, and
yes.
You said that people came in buses and thousands of people, and there's barely enough room for people. I know how he touched my heart, and I'd only known him for a few years. So, but I think that, we went down. So he was murdered, and then we had to go that following week, right?
Yes.
So I remember really my husband not too excited about me going at that point. And I have to say I was a little scared because my daughter and I were going. But the beauty of us being able to give back to Leonard's family, cleaning mm-hmm. out his house,
right.
And also just knowing what he taught us all about the selflessness.
Yes.
You know.
And that would be to not stop going to Haiti.
Right.
You know, because he was one of the main perks. You wanted to see your friend.
Yes.
And
he
he's not there anymore.
And you guys share birthdays,
so
didn't you? Or a couple days apart.
One day
apart. My goodness.
And I have to admit it was a difficult struggle for me because I felt if he wasn't there, I really didn't want to go because he was the main reason why I was going. I got to see him every
trip
that we got to go.
So how did you get yourself to go?
I pushed through it mm-hmm. and was able to work through that. Took a little bit of time, but it is just knowing him and how he always taught us mm-hmm. about pushing forward. Here he was nothing but just a layman, just a church-going man who took his family to church, but he had the love of Jesus beyond anybody I ever knew.
And he taught himself how to play the saxophone,
right.
the guitar, the piano, everything. Go ahead, Kim. What were you going to
say?
Well,
I just wanted to say is that we had to really look at what Leonard's life represented. He would be so sad if we didn't continue to go down and help his family, his friends. And that was his main mission in life, was to feed people.
Right.
He would take extra money that
so we
he got from
not
people.
Go now.
Right. Right.
Which, you know, I was
there
telling
was more people.
Right. I was telling my writer's workshop the other day about how songs hit you. And in the middle of the night after he was murdered, I woke up in the middle of the night with this thought that I had to get out of bed and write. And I was so angry. And I was angry at God. I was angry at the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm not getting up and writing. And I expected it to be some really sad song. And this song comes out, Be the Light, and it's happy and it's upbeat. And I knew it was Leonard going,
yes,
don't mourn me.
That's right.
You know, now take the torch and do it.
Yes.
So if you can tell the listeners where they can donate money for Hope for Haiti and to find out more, because I know a lot of people I meet that say, I've always wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. So what's the website?
Well, the website is www.hope-for, that's the word for, F-O-R, hyphen, Haiti.net. And we have a link for a PayPal, and you can read a little bit about our story and the things that we do there. But that's a great way to go through there. There's an email there. The info at Hope for Haiti will come directly to me, and we can communicate back and forth through emails if someone likes. But that's the main source. And I had a great Giving Tuesday this past Tuesday.
I had over
$1,500 people, or excuse me, $1,500 was raised for food for this January trip coming up. So
that
was very nice.
Awesome. Go ahead, Kim. Were you going to say something?
I just wanted to say that 100% will go to feeding and helping. And I think our phone numbers are on there.
Yep.
If you want to go,
and I am a witness. I am a witness that the money goes there, and it's amazing.
Yes.
And please go to the website. And also, if you want to stay in touch too, I go. If you want to learn more about it, just you know, you can contact me as well. But I want to thank you both for taking the time
thank
to come out and
us.
See me. And
thank
I'd
you.
Also like to thank our sponsor today. Our sponsor today is Senior Home Healthcare. You want a good night's sleep? Look up Senior Home Healthcare. They'll help you with CPAPs and your oxygen needs. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll get together soon.